This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Let's see, issue 98, 99, 100, 102. Hey, where's issue 101?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Technorama. This is our third annual Heroes Con episode. If you're not familiar with Heroes Con, it's a comic book convention held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina, founded by Shelton Drum, owner of the comic shop Heroes Aren't Hard to Find. At the convention, there is a special emphasis on artists from the Silver Age on up and including independent artists. And I had the opportunity to do some interviews for you guys, and this time I have a little twist. I caught up with Dave Slusher from the Evil Genius Chronicles, and he took my recorder and did some interviews on his own for us. So sit back and join us for Heroes Con 2010. Okay, so I'm standing here with...
Shazba,
okay. Well, I was walking by your table and I noticed the name of your book was Today Nothing Happened, which I doubt that's the case for today, right?
Probably not, no. Lots is happening today.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your book and some of your art and whatnot.
Okay, well, basically, it is the story of my hilariously unexciting life. So it started as a class assignment where I had to keep a journal comic, and I realized that there's a lot of funny things in real life. So whenever something humorous happens to me or there's some crazy thing that goes on and everything goes wrong, then I'll find something funny to say about it and do a comic about it.
So is this a web comic or...?
It is. It's at shazba.com, shazba.com is Today Nothing Happened online. It updates 3 times a week on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays because I have to have the weirdest update schedule in the world.
Yeah, much like me. So, what else you got going on here? I see some other illustrations you got.
Oh, yeah, I've got some prints. This is actually based on the comic. I have the 2 prints of cats building robots because we have 2 cats in the family, Puddin' and Boo, and they decided to have a disagreement. And so we joked that they were going to build attack robots and go after each other. So I did little posters of them attacking each other. We have Team Puddin' and Team Boo buttons because apparently I've got to make a fight out of this.
Yeah.
And
so I see they're building stuff out of Legos and cardboard boxes.
Yes. Well, they think they're building beautiful robots that are going to zap the enemy with lasers, but Puddin's got a cardboard box and Boo has Legos. Which is actually based on the real cat, Boo, has been stealing Legos and hiding them. So we say it's for the robot.
Okay. Well, see, I got 4 cats. I'm surprised you only have 2.
Well, it's hard to have a small number. They're like Pringles. Once you get one, you have to get more.
Yeah, tell me about it. Anyway, all right. So if everybody wants to find out more about you, where can we go?
Shazba.com, shazba.com is me and my work. So.
I think you said that once before.
Yes. Again, because nobody can spell Shazba, so okay. I've got to try.
Right. Very cool. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Okay, I'm here with...
Jesse Thomas.
Hey, Jesse. Jesse, right? Thank you. All right, so tell me a little bit about your art. I was walking by your table, and I thought... I thought that some of the illustrations reminded me of Friday the 13th, and you said it should. So can you tell us a little bit about your stuff?
Well, this book I'm doing now is various short stories. It's not a continued book. Heavily inspired by all the bad B-movies I've seen. The first one is... There's a lot of slasher influence in it, so it's that. Inspired also, I guess, by the more traditional comic artwork, the Frazettas, the Warren magazines kind of stuff.
How can you not be inspired by Frazetta?
I I don't know how you can't be.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. So tell us a little about your book itself.
Well, the first issue is basically about, it's like the last 15 minutes of a slasher movie. The girl realizes all her friends are dead, and she gets chased through the woods, and then there's an ending. And that's. I wish there was more to it. There will be on the second issue, but
well, there's the more part. Yeah. So you said some of the slasher movies were some of your inspiration, but for maybe your art style or anything, what some of your other influences?
Marvel comics from the 70s and 80s are a big favorite. I used to read a lot of the Japanese comics, but that up until I guess the early 90s. Then Dave Sim is a huge influence, not on drawing style, but just in doing your own comic.
So if somebody wants to find out more about you or see some of your art, do you have a website or anything?
I've got a blog. Yeah, nightcraftcomics.blogspot.com.
Okay, very cool. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, this is Dave Slusher, special correspondent for Technorama, and I'm here at Heroes Con with Erwin Hasen. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
It's my pleasure.
So what year did you get into drawing comic books?
1936.
Okay.
37. Go ahead.
And how long had you been illustrating at that time?
Oh, about an hour and a half. I became a cartoonist in the sense of selling my work to a magazine that catered to the boxing trade, prize fighting. They needed someone to draw covers for the magazine. The name of the magazine was called Bang, B-A-N-G, in a flea bag of a hotel on West 49th Street in New York City. And the fella needed an artist. And I applied, and he liked my work. And I sat at the typewriter and I drew pictures also. So that's how I started being published.
And when you got into comics, there was basically no history of it. So you guys were kind of...
Right at the beginning.
So what kind of... Since you didn't have kind of sequential art influences, what sort of things did you... Like what other artists were you kind of using to kind of help develop the style?
There were two artists that I can mention without equivocation. Willard Mullen, the great sports cartoonist in that day, and also Roy Crane, who was the greatest cartoonist in the business. Simplicity, and for some reason or other, my instincts pointed me toward them as role models.
So when you first started working with some of these characters that are now kind of iconic, sort of... were you kind of reaching into kind of that well of myth or like, you know, what were you kind of digging into to come up with like the look and the, I don't know, the rendering style for like those early golden ages?
I guess I was just lucky because it came to me with instinctual reasons. Actually, I wanted to be on the theater, on the stage. I wanted to be an entertainer. And that goes deeper into my psyche because I wanted to be loved by the audience. But thank God I didn't go into show business. Whatever told me, keep away. And I stayed being a cartoonist.
Any extent that you kind of, the things that you would have got from performance, you kind of got in, you know, the way you would draw and kind of the, you know, the body language of the...
The way I draw had nothing to do with entertaining. The way I draw, the way I drew and entertaining was purely a selfish thing to get love. He's great. Really. But thank God my instinct said no way. Because there had been a few directors who saw me perform, and they knew that I was a cartoonist, and they said to me, Erwin, I think you're in the wrong profession. And I said, my instinct said, no, no, You're a cartoonist. And when I yell at myself, I don't argue.
So of these characters, what would you say you have the most affection for of the characters you have drawn?
I would say Wildcat, mm-hmm. in the comic book genre. Mm-hmm. Because I had been a cartoonist in the sports world, mm-hmm. and the boxing business and all that. Mm-hmm. So the editor, Sheldon Mayer, of DC Comics, said, we're looking for a hero who's a boxer. Mm-hmm. And Irwin, you used to be in the boxing business. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, that's fine. But in those days, you obey the editor. Mm-hmm. Whatever you say, sir, as long as you got your $4 a week.
So, last question. As the comic industry exists today, is it even recognizable to the industry you started in 70,
no,
60?
It's much more skillful. I mean, it is. Mm-hmm. The guys are really skillful artists. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, I don't even mention so many names. But in those days, it was a primitive. Mm-hmm. It was a primitive milieu. Mm-hmm. That's a good word, milieu.
Right.
It's a primitive kind of in those days. Mm-hmm. But they were all brilliant in those days, too. Mm-hmm. But now it's more polished. And unfortunately, most of them look alike. That's the thing.
Okay.
They all look alike.
All right.
In my mind, you must remember how old I am. So they all look alike. Mm-hmm. It's called the great swipe raid. They swipe.
All right.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Well, thank you very much for your time, sir.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, now I'm standing here with
Nick Valenti.
Hey, Nick. I was looking at some of your art, and I really like some of the stuff. A lot of it's black and white, but the Ninja Turtles kind of caught my attention. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a freelance illustrator out of Jacksonville, Florida. I've been into comics since I can remember, so it's just something I'm kind of going after.
Yeah. So do you have any special projects going on or anything at the moment?
Right now I'm working on a webcomic called Ruby's Fire, which you can check out at rubiesfire.com. It is a mature content, so, you know.
Yeah. What's the theme?
It's basically a superhero girl named Ruby who works for the government. And she finds out that they're kind of chasing her sister, who also has superpowers, which you find out in the first chapter.
Spoiler alert.
It's all in the first book, which is online right now. And so she's trying to go back and kind of save her and whatnot.
That's cool. So what are some of your influences? I see, of course, it's a lot of the DC, actually. I started to say Marvel, but I see a little bit of mix.
Yeah, I like both. I was a Marvel guy for a long time and recently been reading a lot of Batman and kind of getting into the DC universe a little bit. But
that's cool. See Ninja Turtles here and Batman. So if somebody wants to find out more about you, where can we go?
You can go to njvalenti.blogspot.com or again, check out rubiesfire.com and it'll send you, there'll be a link to my website as well.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, now I'm standing here with
Robert Wilson IV.
The fourth. What happened to the other three?
Oh, two of them died, and one of them is my dad.
Okay, they're in the other book that you wrote. No, I'm just kidding. So tell me a little bit about your art. I saw earlier when I walked by, I saw your book called Knuckleheads, mm-hmm. and I thought the A Team because the black guy has a mohawk, but then you said it's not. But can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, Knuckleheads is a superhero sitcomic. Which is about Trevor and Lance, an alien race, decides to give Lance the superpowers of the Crystal Fist, but he is responsible and he was out paying bills, and so they ended up giving it to his irresponsible, fat, lazy roommate, Trevor, instead.
Isn't that always the way it goes?
It is certainly the way it goes with me.
Well, that's cool. So how many issues do you have out?
Right now, we just have the one issue. We self-published, and we're hoping to get the second issue out by the end of the summer.
So is it... Oh, it's you and somebody else writing, or...?
Yes. It's written by Brian Winkler, and I do the art.
Okay, very cool. What's some of the other stuff I see here? I see Catwoman and whatnot, so can you tell us a little bit about some of the other things that you've drawn?
Sure, I've got several commissions out here. Most of these are examples of commissions, a lot of superheroes, and then I also have a few prints, stuff from Lost and Hellboy, things like that.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, that stuff looks really good. So what are some of your influences? Art looks pretty cool. Looks like you're doing a lot of black and white.
Yeah, I'd say right now my biggest influences are probably Mike Allred and Paul Pope, but there are, you know, too many to list, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I know that feeling. Everybody's an influence on me.
Yeah.
Good or bad. Well, cool. If somebody wants to find out a little more about you, where we go?
If you want to find out more about my art, go to robertwilsoniv.com. And if you want to find more about knuckleheads, go to crystalfist.com.
Okay, very cool. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher, special correspondent for the Technorama podcast, Heroes Con 2010. I'm here with Dave Malky, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much.
So give us kind of the elevator pitch for Wondermark.
Yeah, sure. Wondermark is a comic strip created from entirely from 19th century woodcuts. So it's a collage. It's images taken from old books, recontextualized, made hilarious in contemporary settings. And it is more than just a free comic strip on a beautiful website. It is a new way to live your life twice a week.
All right. That may be the pitchiest of the elevator pitches I've ever got.
It's because it's also the most relevant and correct.
So what kind of attracted you to this aesthetic as a way to kind of bring your art out? I mean, what got that kind of Victorian era thing going for you?
Sure. There's a couple different elements that combine. Number one is there is a huge amount of this material available in the public domain. Before photography was used in magazines, newspapers, publications, every illustration had to be a drawing, an engraving. Mm-hmm. And so in the age when mass media was born, which is, you know, the late 19th century, now you have nationwide magazines for the first time in the U.S. and Europe. You've got literally thousands of publications with full of these old engravings and images. It's tremendously evocative. It's a craft that's totally lost. And these things are, I mean, the world is littered with them. They are just everywhere. Mm-hmm. So the material is available. Number two, I could either be the millionth best cartoonist in the world or the best guy doing this. So it's an easy choice.
So do you find, is there any kind of, artistic tension or cognitive dissonance in doing a webcomic kind of made up of, like, bits of kind of ancient ephemera?
Yes and no. I say no because the web as a distribution medium, I think, is not, the content does not reflect that. Mm-hmm. I think everything is on a website now. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's nothing that's like, wait a minute, that's on a website, but it's old. But that doesn't make any sense. No, that doesn't happen. There is a bit of cognitive dissonance, though, because I have a comic strip that is Victorian-looking people and people in the Victorian era who are eating Cheetos and using computers and riding in helicopters. So that is the fun part of the strip. It's it's the idea that I can, through the use of Photoshop and collage and a little bit of time, make something that looks like it could have been a Victorian engraving, a legitimate Victorian engraving of a giant helicopter. And it's like, wait, did that exist? I don't think it did, but it really looks like it does. And that's the, in a nutshell, that's the what I'm trying to evoke with the strip.
Mm-hmm. So does your writing fall out of the art available to you? Or do you come up with an idea and you think, boy, this is a great idea. Where can I find the art to kind of support that idea?
In general, it's the latter nowadays. Uh-huh. I've been doing this long enough that I kind of think in comics. Mm-hmm. You know, a situation or a script will suggest itself to me from just the environment or from something that happens in my life. So I write scripts and then I try and find images that will work with them. In some cases, that's very easy. It's just, all right, I need two people having a conversation. Oh, okay, this is very simple. Or it's, let's build a helicopter and let's do a whole set and let's find props. And, you know, it's almost like sculpting in a way where I take pieces and I build them or I add them together to build something. Mm-hmm. However, that being said, I have a freedom that a lot of other artists don't, which is if I don't have a script ready, I can just put a couple things together. What is this bear saying to this cat? I don't know. Let's find out. What do they look like they're saying to each other? What do their expressions look like? He looks mad. Why is he mad? I don't know. Oh, look, let's put a pitcher of water on his head. And, you know, just I can sort of build the scene and then kind of figure it out as it goes, which is, you know, it's really fun. And it allows me to still be able to make comics on days when I don't have any scripts written.
Now, I know you two are a podcaster. I am a listener to your podcast. What made you want to join up with Chris Straub and purvey madcap antics every week?
Well, Chris and I, for a very long time, have known, just in the course of our conversations, that we riff very well together. We have a very similar way of thinking about the world. If we get on talking about a topic, there's no telling where it'll go. And it's always a challenge, and it's always very entertaining, and it's a lot of fun to talk with him. And Chris, like myself, you know, he's a cartoonist, but you can only do so many things with comics. You can make things that are in books, and you can, you know, put them on a website, and maybe you can do something slightly more elaborate than that every now and then if you want to do an animation, like Chris is an animator. But that's not always the be-all and end-all of our ambition. And so, okay, well, what's a thing we could do that involves a performance? So that involves working in long form, because we both do short form comics. Or that involves, you know, collaboration, which is something that we don't do in our other work. So all these things come together into, let's just do a talk show. Let's do a podcast. We really like, the show is called Tweet Me Harder, and it's collaborative between Chris and myself, and it's also collaborative with the audience, because we stream it live, and people can use Twitter to talk to us while the show's going on, and we incorporate that into the show. So that sort of audience interaction is something that we get a little bit of with, if we're doing a Ustream or something where we're making comics and talking to folks. And now we can take that to the next level and do a whole thing where that's the point of it. It's not just a byproduct of, oh, I'm happening to be making a comic and streaming it while I'm doing it. And so we can also take that that form, you know, into audio, into live performance, into a book now that we have that's a wholly different book from either of our comics. And it's just a different itch to scratch than the comics.
Do you, have you ever had an idea that began either in the podcast or the comic and metastasized to the other one?
Yeah, you know, every now and then. I mean, we come up with a lot of material in the course of the show and in prepping for the show. And in fact, when we are just hanging out, we come up with material that we then later were like, I wish we'd been recording that. We can never go back to it. There was a great thing that we came up with that was you take a pill that's so big it's like eating an apple. And that kind of went on for like 20 minutes into some whole other thing where it's like you'd be vaccinated against apples now and this whole thing. And, you know, we could never recreate that for the podcast. But if I remember a line or a joke from that came about through that conversation, I could put that into a strip later on. Why not? There was I remember one or two strips recently where the punchline may not have been something that we thought of earlier, but the fact that I was even thinking on that topic was because I'd had a conversation with Chris earlier. And so, yeah, there's a lot of free flow of ideas back and forth. And every now and then I'll have an idea for a strip that's like, this would be very complex for a four-panel strip, but I bet we could talk about it for 15 minutes on the show. Right. And, you know, so it's nice to have different venues for different types of ideas.
So do you have any kind of things in the future, like even MatterCap, other different projects? What's the future hold for you?
Well, right now, I feel like my time is pretty well taken up with the two, with Wondermark and Tweet Me Harder, which are, you know, my two brands, as far as you could say. But both of them have different projects within them. I have a new book out of Wondermark Comics I'm traveling around promoting. I've got a line of greeting cards that we're going to be doing this summer for Wondermark. We have the new Tweet Me Harder book and also a live performance of that coming up, you know, in Portland in June. And we try and take that to different cities throughout the year. So, and we've got a lot of other big plans for that I don't want to say too much about. But, you know, there's always new stuff going on. And if it's not one, it's the other or both.
Cool. Well, very much. Very good. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. Now I am here with
Mitch Rogers.
Hey, Mitch. How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
So I was walking by your table, and you were pretty chatty, so I stopped by. So tell us a little bit about some of your work, some of the art you're working on.
Okay. I'm doing a five-issue horror miniseries called The Boger. It's basically Hellraiser meets Reservoir Dogs, kind of.
Well, I thought that was an interesting mix when you said that earlier. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, the Reservoir Dogs, this kind of weird mix?
Basically, the concept is this... immortal demigod is going after a crime lord, And part of the story is finding out, you know, who the crime lord is and why. And basically, the Boger's somewhat of a demigod for spirit of vengeance, so to speak, that he can be summoned by witches. And, you know, there's like a spell book that people read that can summon him. And basically, whatever act of vengeance you want thrust upon somebody, if you give your life to him, as in he, you know, he kills you and eats your body, he can, you know, exact vengeance that way.
Hmm.
He's, you know, basically cursed to forever do that, but he views it more as, you know, he enjoys it other than, you know, it being a curse to him.
Yeah, well, see, I was sitting here thinking all the things I could, you know, work on, you know, get him to take care of for me, but then you have me until the soul thing, and...
Yeah, it's, because, you know, I've always been influenced by, like, H.P. Lovecraft and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and a lot of the stuff, like, you know, the lengths people will go for vengeance, you know, which, you know, is always, like, you know, a guy gets a bunch of guns, goes out and kills the people. Well, what if, you know, there's somebody that you could, you know, that could do that for you, and what if there was this ultimate price to it? You know, would you still do it, so to speak? You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. So, so you do comic books. Do you do any web stuff or what?
I'm in the middle of revamping the Boger.com, which will go back online August 1st, mm-hmm. I'm hoping. And I do a lot of, like, paintings. I'm also writing some short stories. And I also have a bunch of other comic book ideas in development after the first Boger miniseries wraps up, mm-hmm. which the final issue will come out in Christmas.
Okay. So what kind of writing do you do? The same style?
Yeah, it's mostly in the genre of horror, but some of it's satirical, some of it's, you know, unrelenting gore, some of it's, you know, ordinary gothic fare. But it's all under the big category of horror.
Okay. Very cool. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks a lot.
Thanks. I appreciate being here with you.
Oh, by the way, where can people find you? I know you said you're reworking your website, but what's the address?
It's theboger.com. It's theboger.com.
Okay. Very cool. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher, special correspondent for Technorama, and I'm here speaking with Brett Geiger, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much for having me.
So your main comic is Evil Inc. Give us kind of the elevator pitch for Evil Inc.
Evil Inc. is a corporation run for supervillains by supervillains, because you can do more evil if you do it legal.
One of the things I like in the strip, so I'm a reader of the strip, I like the fact that the more you get into the sanctioned evil, really the more evil it is.
Yeah, it kind of parallels to a certain degree what we deal with every day. My favorite example is an ATM. When you go to an ATM and it charges you $2, $3 for a transaction that you know in your heart of hearts didn't cost more than a quarter, even if you count the electricity and the bank taking a decent profit. Yet at the same time, when you look at that, you never really rebel against it. You just accept that amount of evil in your life, because it's easier than turning against it and saying, well, I'm not going to use an ATM anymore. So we accept a certain amount of evil and a certain amount of corporatized evil in our life. And I think that is a great breeding ground for comedy.
So what was the initial impetus that made you create this strip in the very first place?
Well, back in 2000, I started a strip called Greystone Inn. Mm-hmm. It was a comic strip about a comic strip starring a gargoyle. And I did it for 5 years. And in 2004, I was sitting in the Toronto Comic Con watching people walk by my table and realizing that I had created a strip that, although it was very good, it was very hard for people to get into. So as people were not stopping by my table, I decided to kind of retool the strip. There was a part of that strip that was a corporatized evil kind of idea, and people really liked it. And there was also a character called Lightning Lady, and people really liked her. And I took those two things and decided to spin those off into their own title and focus on the idea of supervillains in a corporate setting. I knew I could write on that theme for a long time, and I knew there would be lots of places for me to go from there. And that's what I did. I wrote the first 3 weeks on the plane ride back from Toronto and came back having decided that I was going to end the one strip and spin off the other one. And by June 2005, I had completed a complete progression from the old to the new, mm-hmm. and it started the new strip.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like is that you do get the you get to have your cake and eat it too, in the fact that you get to comment on this stuff. You are, I follow your blog and I can see your, you know, five to pull, one to pass, you know, every week. So you are unabashedly in this world. At the same time, you kind of make fun of it and you get to comment on it.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much there that's rife for creativity. I mean, and there's some stuff that I like kind of taking an idea that they had put out, like maybe a Dark Reign idea or a Blackest Night idea, and run with that in my own strip for a couple of days, using my own characters. And there's so much there that really kind of gets me excited and gets me writing. And there's so much that I think my audience feels the same way, that they see a little reference to Secret Wars and they get the same kind of thrill that I do.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your drawing style, when you draw the ladies, you have kind of a penchant for drawing both in a cartoony kind of style and yet they're really pretty sexy. So, like, how do you kind of meld those two worlds artistically?
That's something that has developed over a long time. Mm. I've gotten to be a better artist, I've been able to pull off more of a cheesecake kind of a look. Mm. And I think that also plays into the overall genre of comic books. That also mirrors what's going on in comics today. Mm. And it's been a little bit of a tightrope for me to walk between cartoony and realistic. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, to be honest with you, I'm still finding my footing in that regard. Mm-hmm. All I know is I've got the ability as I've gotten a little bit better, mm-hmm. and I can't not do it. Mm-hmm. So and I fall into that that category of the very sexy women and the Dagwood Bumstead kind of guys, you know. But it works. At least for now it works, until I get to that next stage and decide to start doing another derivation of that.
Mm-hmm. And so I know you yourself are a podcaster, and I listen to your podcast. So what does that kind of, like, what does being able to do that show, Webcomics Weekly, and talking about webcomics, does that make doing the comic easier in the fact that it gives you some guys to kind of rant with and kind of unload with, and then you can, all right, now that that's off my chest, let's go draw.
To an extent, yes. And also to an extent, Scott Kurtz, Dave Kellett, Chris Straub, and I are all really close friends. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy so much talking to each other that this just became a good excuse for us to have this group telephone conversation, mm-hmm. tape it, put it up, and get something kind of useful out of it. We would probably do this even without the podcast. The podcast just made sense because we were writing the How to Make Webcomics book at the time, and it made sense to kind of do this thing that also became an offshoot of that. But this is something that that is just a natural progression from our mutual friendship.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see for your future? Kind of what's your... like, what would be the best case scenario for, like, the next 5 or 10 years in your career if, like, everything catches fire and goes exactly how you want?
Well, that's hard to say because I'm involved in so many things right now. It's hard to decide which one I'd like to take off most. Mm. As you mentioned, I started my own video cast now called Five to Pull, One to Pass, where I talk about five comics to make sure you pick up on your pull list, and it comes out every Wednesday, mm-hmm. and one that's maybe not so great. And that's been getting really good response. Webcomics.com, which is a subscription site for web cartoonists, is doing really well. And my own work is doing really well. I guess my best case scenario is that those things continue to the extent that I'm able to work in comics and express all those different facets of myself for as long as people are willing to put up with it.
Last question. What was going through your mind the very first time you heard the song Brad Geiger Stole My Woman?
I'll tell you what was going through my mind. This was going through my mind. I wish I wasn't listening to this in front of my son, because the next day he went into kindergarten singing that song and I had a lot of splaining to do. True story.
All right, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
This is Dave Slusher, special correspondent for Technorama. We're here at Heroes Con 2010, and I'm here with Alec Longstreth, and welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
So I've met you at a couple, I've met you previously at Heroes Con, so kind of What's your kind of con life like when you go from con to con?
Well, I usually just get super excited. It's a great chance to bring the tribe of cartoonists together. So I get really jazzed to see what all my friends are working on and to make new friends. And, you know, you see stuff and it inspires you. It's like cartooning 99% of the time is like sitting alone by yourself in a room. So it's nice to kind of get around and actually interact with not only your peers, but like people who are reading your work. So I always go home super jazzed to draw and, you know, with a lot of energy.
So give us a rundown of what your primary projects are.
Well, the main thing I'm working on is a graphic novel called Basewood, which I'm serializing in my mini comic Phase 7. I've got 3 chapters done, and I've got 2 more to go. So I'm working on Chapter 4. That's kind of my main thing. And then I do subscriptions for Phase 7.
So
I put out sort of filler issues like while I'm working on the next Basewood issue because it's pretty detailed stuff. And I think it usually takes me about a year to get one of those issues out. So I have, like, sketchbook stuff or, you know, diary comics, that kind of stuff, to keep the subscribers happy.
So that seems like a really sensible way, particularly when you're working on a long work. It seems like a hard life to, like, go off by yourself for, you know, 2 years into a graphic novel and then, like, no feedback and no anything. And then when it's done, here's this one giant thing I did. So it kind of makes a lot of sense to kind of extract out a mini comic and publish it periodically rather than having this one big bang at the very end.
Yeah, I think I've got like 2 more big projects in the works, and I think I'll definitely do some sort of serialization. I'm not sure I would do them this big. Like a chapter of Basewood might be 50 pages. I'm sort of lately I've been really into Carl Barks, who was like my favorite cartoonist when I was growing up, and I've been sort of rediscovering his work lately. You know, and he built all the whole mythos of the Disney Ducks, Uncle Scrooge and Jarrod Yerlewis and all those guys really in like 10-page installments with the occasional 48-page or 64-page Uncle Scrooge adventure. But most of that world was built just 10 pages at a time, and, you know, it's an enjoyable way to read comics. So, yeah, I'm sort of thinking I've got like this big story all about me, my life in Star Wars, and I'm thinking of doing it in sort of smaller chunks like that in Phase 7 probably. So it'll be collected someday in a book, but sort of, yeah. And, yeah, you're exactly right. Like Jeff Smith talks about that a lot too when he was doing Bone, you know. He sort of brought up the cow race as like a joke in one issue, and all the fans were like, oh, you know, do we get to see the cow race? And there's like, well, I guess I got to draw this. And then, you know, that's like one of the best parts of Bone. It's like super funny. So, no, it's good to get feedback, and, you know, it helps you make sure everything's clear. And I do that too with my peers, just showing pages to people before, because even though, you know, it is a smaller chunk, it still might take me a year or a year and a half to get an issue out.
It seems kind of like you're on the gregarious end of the personality spectrum of cartoonists. So in this kind of venue particularly where you gotta kind of, you're sitting behind a table and there's a certain P.T. Barnum huckster aspect to it, does that kind of help you out? I mean, do you stress over the interpersonal, or do you like actually like to come out and talk to people?
Well, I'm 30. I've calmed down a lot. I think when I put out the first issue of Phase 7, I was like 22, and I was definitely, when I was at a show, I was like sweating bullets and jumping around and pretty nervous. You know, and it's hard. Like, you got to remember people. Even you and I had an interaction earlier today. I was like, I totally recognize this guy. I know he's a super friendly guy. He's bought my comics before, but I was like, I couldn't remember your name. And, you know, after this, I'll probably, next year, I'll be like, oh, that's Dave. He interviewed me last year. So, you know, you got 1,000 names bouncing around in your head, and I'm a teacher, so I got to get 50 new names every year and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, no, I mean, most cartoonists are pretty shy people. They like to be by themselves, and it's hard. But, you know, you got that other 99% of the time to do that. This is your 1% of the time where you got to stand up, look people in the eye, shake their hand, and interact with them because it's really your only chance. So I say, yeah, just try and be friendly and, you know, you don't have to do the hard sell. Hey, it's Phase 7, blah, blah, blah. It's a mini comic. Blah. You know, it's like you can just say hello to people. And, you know, if they're wearing a cool shirt, you say, oh, I like your shirt or whatever. And then you start talking. And, you know, my mom has always taught me and my sisters to just be, you know, be polite. Talk to the other person more than you're talking about yourself, which I guess is hard to do in an interview. But, you know, you say, oh, where are you from? Oh, cool. You know, my dad grew up around there and blah, blah, blah. And pretty soon you're talking and then they're more inclined to buy a comic book. You know, because really you're, you know, my comic book, I don't know about the rest of Heroes Con, but in the Indie Island, most of our comic books really reflect who we are. And, you know, it's like you're buying a little piece of me, and once that connection's been established, it's easier to sort of, you know, you meet people each year and you establish a relationship. But really, it's that first contact that's hard. And, I don't know. It's hard for cartoonists. It really is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I've never had a problem. I don't really fear like public speaking or anything. So I enjoy it quite a bit. But I know some people really don't. They hide behind their sketchbook and just, you know, wait for the show to be over.
So tell us a little about what you do at CCS.
Well, I went up there in 2008. I was living in New York City, and I went up as the fellow to work on Basewood, my graphic novel that I'm working on. And I did one chapter while I was up there. And James Sturm, who founded the school, used to teach the professional practices class, which is a lot of, you know, it's kind of like self-publishing, like hustling and getting business cards and letterheads and, you know, how to submit stuff to publishers and all that kind of stuff that I've been doing for a couple years. So during my fellowship year, I actually taught that class for him because he was working on Market Day and, you know, he's a really busy guy. And so I did that class, and then I decided to stay in Vermont afterwards. And so they, you know, I taught that class again, and they gave me some more classes. I co-taught Cartooning Studio with Jason Lutz. And then in the spring of last year, I was teaching with Steve Bissett for the senior thesis class. So, and next year I'll be teaching production design. So I'm sort of jumping all over the place, teaching whatever they need me to teach. But it's a great place. I mean, it's crazy that place even exists in the first place. And to get to be involved is just a real honor. And you know, I'm working beside Jason Lutz, who's one of my comics heroes, and he's just couldn't be more talented. He'd burst into flames if he had any more talent in his body. But and he's the nicest guy too. So it's my dream come true. I love that place.
Okay, and so kind of where do you see what's your kind of hope for your like the next couple years of your career?
Just keep putting out Phase 7. My general goal is I want to reach issue 100 before I die. So I'm on, I got something like 12 issues out. Once I finish Basewood, I'll be at issue 19. So, yeah, just keep on keeping on. I just kind of want to do this forever. Like, my big role model, I think, is John Porcellino. And he's at King Cat. I think he just hit issue 70 or something. So, you know, and he's been doing it for 20 years. So, yeah, I'd love to just keep doing what I'm doing, you know, self-publishing, full control, and, you know, maybe if someone wants to print one of the books when it's done, you know, if a publisher approached me about doing Basewood, I'd be up for that, but yeah, I want to do Phase 7 as long as I'm alive. They'll pull issue 100 out of my cold, dead hands.
All right, well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Okay, thank you.
There you have it. There's our Heroes Con Special 2010. I want to thank everybody for giving us their time. Mitch Rogers, Nick Valente, Erwin Hasen, Robert Wilson IV, Shazba, Brad Geiger, Alec Longstreth, and Dave Malky. And I also want to thank Dave Slusher from the Evil Genius Chronicles for spending some time with me and doing some interviews for us. Certainly appreciate that. We also appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to contact us and show us your love. You can call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. Or you can email Chuck and I at technorama@chuckjet.com, or you can find us on Twitter at ctomasi, at stepk, and at technorama, and also at the website chuckchat.com. And, you know, while you're there, you can throw a tip in the tip jar, or, you know, throw us a review somewhere. Those are free at iTunes, Music Store, The Podcast Pickle, Podcast Alley, or... This show is a member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more about Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with farpointmedia.com. And all the great podcasts over there, check them out. We know you'll find something you'll enjoy because there's a ton of stuff over there. If you're getting the show by clicking on the website and listening, consider subscribing and getting the show delivered to you automatically for free. Drop either one of us an email if you need more information on that. Tell a friend about Technorama, and until next time, 101.